sit down on the cushion. We're like, okay, great. I'm going to quiet my mind. And your mind is just going a million miles an hour. And you start to...
Wait, what did you say?
Yeah. You know, it just keeps going. And we have like a gazillion things to distract us from everything. Even when we're trying to be quiet, those distractions are still here. And so, you know, while you're sitting there doing this, people get frustrated and they think like, oh my gosh, I'm the worst person at this. You know, like I completely suck at being mindful and I can't silence my mind for like 2 seconds. And so I call myself the worst Buddhist just to say like, look, we've all been there, you know, like I'm a monk. I still suck at this, you know, like just keep sitting on the cushion and keep going. That's the important part.
Good. Any of your books, are they called The Worst Buddhist? Is that possibly where that comes from?
I didn't
notice the names on our questionnaire, but
yeah. So
we can get into that later. But is one of them
Yes, I have a children's book called The Worst Buddhist, and it teaches kids like how to deal with difficult emotions and try to start them off on a meditation practice at a really early age. So I think the Dalai Lama said that if we can teach everybody meditation, teach all kids under 8 meditation, we can end world violence within a generation. And so in the spirit of that, that's where my kid book came out.
How long ago did he say that?
Boy, I don't know. That's why he's the big llama, you know, like, so he's the king. But yeah, I want to say it was shortly after 9/11, somewhere right in there, when there was all the conflict going. So
why is there so much of that? Why is there so much?
Why is there so much
war and conflict?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the way we get information in the world now. You know, like almost everything goes through some type of algorithm before it gets to us, you know, like, you know, when we look at Facebook or we look at social media, where you look at the news or something like that, all that stuff gets filtered. You know, like we watch the news that we want to hear. You know, we don't watch the stations who say the stuff that we don't want to hear. And because of that, we just get this complete polarization happening in the world right now. And, you know, like there's not really a middle ground to meet on anymore. You know, it's a little frustrating, kind of sad.
Yeah, it's too bad for sure. Because I've always thought like we give all this, like, we do all these different things, right? Like, you know, I try to make my shows or my videos about really peace of mind, because I believe if you have your own peace of mind, then that's going to come up and reflect things out there also, right?
Absolutely.
So you're going to, like, I've done a thousand videos, and I post stuff, and I talk to people, and there's a bunch of us out there. I always wonder, why is it so hard for us just to get it and not fight or have so much conflict over that? And a lot of times over stupid things.
It's very difficult. It's kind of sad, like the world we're in today. Sometimes just being kind to each other, showing somebody loving kindness, smiling at somebody on an elevator or something like that can kind of set people's walls up, you know, puts them on the defensive, like, oh, what is this person want or expect from me, when actually we don't want anything, or we're not expecting anything. We're just being kind.
Yeah. So for me, I've noticed like when I see that, it's like a challenge, and I work harder.
I do too.
So how's your day going?
Exactly. Yeah.
Not that great.
Bring it in for the hug. And, yeah. You know.
Oh, you go that far?
That's usually when, you know, they start pulling at the mace and spraying. But no, I will try to, if it is making somebody uncomfortable, you know, I'll try to go that little extra bit just to hopefully push them out of that zone a little bit, you know, to where like, okay, great, you know, this is just somebody being nice and friendly, and I can smile back and nothing's going to happen in the world, you know.
So how did you go from a Marine to a Buddhist monk?
Well, it's...
And how are you here in Salt Lake City?
Right. Okay. Well, so I was born and raised in Salt Lake City, so just after everything settled, it was time to come home and be here. But I am, you know, like if somebody had told me 20 years ago, you know, like, look, you're going to be a monk, you know, I never would have believed it ever, you know.
20 years ago.
Yeah, I'm like the least, you know, qualified person to do this, which again, the worst Buddhist thing. But so I joined the Marines when I was 18 and loved the Marine Corps. You know, it was a great experience and stuff, and I love my Marine brothers. And but so the Gulf War came out, and the first Gulf War, that one that lasted about a weekend, you know, like, so that came out. But I went over there. Yeah, so I went over there for that. And, you know, like just seeing how the war machine worked and everything like that, it kind of opened my eyes to a lot of things that, like, yeah, there's many things in the world that were happening in a way that wasn't necessarily how I was seeing it. You know, like my perception on it was just tainted a little bit. And it made me wonder, like, okay, what's going on? Like, what's real in the world? What's reality? And so after the Gulf War, I went to Japan for a little while and stayed in a monastery there, a Zen monastery, and began studying Buddhism. Well, a lot of it too was just I wasn't ready to come back into the world yet. You know, making that shift from war to civilian life can be difficult, and I just wasn't ready. So I went there, and when it was time to come home, I found a monastery here, a Zen monastery, and started training at it. And a friend of mine was getting ready to go through the monk process and take his vows and everything. And my teacher pulled me aside and he says, "Hey, Darren, you should maybe think about this too." And I, you know, after I stopped laughing for 20 minutes, I realized he was serious. And I was like, "Really? You've got to be kidding me." And so he kind of explained something to me, and he called it the Frodo effect. So the Frodo effect, like from the Lord of the Rings. So in the Lord of the Rings, Frodo could carry the ring, and he was the only one who could. You know, like everybody else who tried, they would get all, you know, anxious and possessed by it, and they'd want the power, and they'd run with it. But because Frodo didn't want anything to do with it, you know, like he kind of hated the ring, and he's just like, "No, get it away from me."
Yeah,
because he had that attitude, he was the only one who could carry it. You know, so my teacher's saying, like, well, if you have this anxiousness about it, and you're kind of saying, like, "No, I can't do that, or I'm not the one to do this," maybe that means you are the one to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And he encouraged me to do it, and so I gave it a try. Became a monk.
Well, it's interesting. So you're saying the people that don't want to do something the most are the best for it?
A lot of times, yes, I find that, you know. A lot of people, they have these desires, they have good hearts, and they want to, like, just be able to show that and do something positive and meaningful in the world, but they get caught up. Like Kevin Smith had a great interview where he was talking about people who say why all the time. You know, like, okay, great, you know, you want to go down to a homeless shelter and feed people. Well, why do you want to do that? You know, why nobody else is doing that? Why do you want to do that? Okay, you want to write a Buddhist book about zombies and so why nobody else is doing that? Why would you ever want to do that? But the important thing is finding the people in your life who will tell you why not, you know, do it. Great. You want to make a time machine out of Jolly Ranchers, you know, like, great, do it. Use great. That's probably the best way ever, you know.
Wait.
But
where does Jolly Ranchers and a time machine, how does that come up?
I just think they're kind of like Legos, and so they stack together easily.
You have to lick them.
Yeah, you lick them, and then, they're like a universal, you know, brick that we can use, and so, but they taste good too.
So tell us, you mentioned zombies and Buddhist monk. Tell us a little bit about that. That's about one of your books.
Yeah,
right?
One of my books is called Rebirth, and it's about a Buddhist student who, his teacher dies in a zombie apocalypse, and he is trying to find the reincarnation. You know, like how, like when the Dalai Lama will die, you know, they search for the reincarnation of him and then find it. So he's looking for the reincarnation of his teacher during the zombie apocalypse. And actually, it's kind of funny. Salenta is one of the role models, or like one of the character models that I based.
A zombie?
No. Like the main antagonist in the book is based on Salenta. So,
really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, before any Darren.
Yeah, we didn't even know each other then.
I could see that.
Yeah. I saw a picture of her and I thought, like, okay, that's a woman who could control everything. And so, you know.
That's funny.
It was the most awkward.
And here she is putting things together.
Yeah.
Right?
And so I sent her this message. It was like the most awkward thing ever. It was like, you know, like, because we didn't know each other. And I was like, hey, you know, can I can I list you in the acknowledgement page because one of these characters is based on you. Oh, by the way, they're like a bad guy, but I don't think you're a bad guy. And, like,
it was, I just modeled the bad guy over you.
So awkward. And so once it came back, I think she mentioned a restraining order and there was like some other stuff. But you know.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times. Cool. Well, tell us a little bit about the book, though.
All right. So all of my books, I started off in fiction, and it's really kind of weird. Like, I didn't intend to be a writer, even though, like, I have a degree in English literature and stuff, and you do a lot of writing in that. But I work at graveyard job, and I'm, like, the only one in the building, you know, and so out of sheer boredom, I just kind of started writing a project, and I didn't think it would ever go anywhere. And when it finished, I showed it to some friends and family, and they was like, "You should do this. You should put this out there." And so I was like, "Well, okay, let's give it a try." And you know, just in the meantime, I just kept writing, and then suddenly I had all these books, and I was like, "What am I going to do with this?" You know, like, how do I promote myself and do all this stuff and get the word out there? So I started going to, like, some of the Comic-Con conventions, you know, and just setting up a little table. And I first went there and I thought, okay, I'm going to be the lonely table at the con. Like, nobody is going to come see this, you know. Like, first off, not a lot of people read anymore, let alone, like, okay, booze fiction, what, that's a thing, you know, like, okay, move right along to the next table, you know, but people started responding to it, and I think one of the reasons why is because, like, the way I present these books, I do them in a way that, you know, it has a lot of spirituality and theology and philosophy in them, but it's not in a really heavy-handed way that, you know, like, just beat you over the head with it, or like, I take references from a lot of pop culture characters, like, you know, because in many ways they're becoming our spiritual teachers. You know, we're learning ethics from Superman and, you know, Spider-Man. You know, great power comes great responsibility, and that's a great mantra to live by. And so if we can incorporate that into, like, some of the books and stuff, it just makes it a little bit easier for people to understand, especially, like, younger readers right now, because it's like, oh, great, Star Wars, Yoda. I get that, you know, I can see the Buddhists in that, or...
Mm-hmm. And everybody loves Yoda.
Yeah, everyone loves Yoda, or The Matrix is another one, you know, like, if you point out, oh, there's some Buddhist teachings in there, like, oh, great, mm-hmm. I get that, I understand, so...
Why do you think Buddhist teachings is found in pop culture like that?
You know, I think one reason why it's there is because a beautiful thing about Buddhism is that you don't have to just be a Buddhist. You know, like, for meditation and mindfulness, anything like that, like, you can still be your own religion and do this, you know, like there's no conversion factor, there's nothing like that. In fact, like, in the Jewish community, Buddhism is taking, you know, a big influence, and a lot of people studying meditation. It's funny, they call them Boo Jews, you know, like, it's just kind of funny, but, like,
you didn't tell these guys it was so funny.
But, you know, so like, say for example, you're a Catholic or you're a Mormon or something like that, you don't have to give that up to start a mindfulness program, you know, just, you can start meditating anywhere. And so when people can see this, when they can see these teachings that are everywhere, but they don't ask them, like, okay, well, great, give this up, you know, and I think that gives them, like, a little sense of peace and calm. One of my favorite things is when I can find Buddhism in really, really strange places. Like, one of my favorites, that people talk about this, or people question me about this all the time, but, like, the Saw franchise. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's something called a bodhisattva in Buddhism. And what a bodhisattva is, that's somebody who doesn't necessarily strive to achieve enlightenment, but their job is to get other people enlightened, to kind of clear the path for them.
By torture?
Yeah. Well, so in the Saw movies,
I've seen the first Saw.
Yeah.
And then the other, I might have seen one other, but after that, I'm just like,
So like, when you become a monk, or when you take refuge in Buddhism, which is the first step of becoming, you know, you make this vow to, like, okay, great, I'm going to end the suffering for all sentient beings on the planet. And you're like, okay, well, great, that's a...
You put those two together, and then it gives you power. Sorry, guys.
There you go. All right. But, you know, so they ask you this, to take this vow that you're going to end the suffering for all sentient beings on the planet. Okay. Well, great. Let, you know, how do we do that? You know, they don't give you any type of guideline or checkbook or anything like that. They're just go do it, you know. And so, like in the Saw movie, he's kind of like this bodhisattva who is broken and taking it to this just extreme torture way and stuff, you know. But yeah, so like obviously they didn't write
he's
Saw
a Buddhist,
the Buddhist
but he's
and yeah, yeah, you know, but you can see it that way. And so like when you can start to see your spiritual practice in the real world, I think that's when it becomes alive for you. You know, you're like, okay, great, this makes sense. This isn't just something that I do on Sundays or like when I'm sitting on a cushion, you know, like this is actually applying to my life. And
yeah, I do that actually myself. This show's kind of part of that. Not to get like all solemn about it. So what books do you have? Tell us what you have. Four books, you said?
Yes, I have.
One fiction and one.
Yeah, so I have four fiction and one nonfiction. My main series is a series called The Sea of Sin, which is based on a Buddhist monk and a Catholic priest who are best friends and just how they serve their communities and like what kind of trouble that gets them into and how they have fun with it and stuff. And they're very unlikely spiritual leaders. You know, I kind of see myself that way. Like, you know, when people ask me like, oh, great, you're a Dharma teacher. I'm like, well, I have a Dharma class. Teacher is a little bit of a stretch. You know?
Well,
but,
if you have a class, you are.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, it's just, it's hard, like, because it's a little sad. Like, people are like, oh my gosh, you're coming to me for this. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not. But yeah, so.
So that goes right back to your whole beginning of it.
Yeah, to the Frodo
theory.
The
maybe you're the best one for it, like you said.
Yeah. So I have the two books in the CSN series, and I have a third one of that that's coming out this year. Then I have the zombie book that I told you about. I also have a nonfiction
based on Talenta.
Okay. Actually, the whole reason why I wrote that book is so I get a chance to meet Talenta, but you know, like, don't tell her that. So, but then I have a nonfiction book, which is called Ronin Buddhism, which is just basically about like how to establish a practice. Like, say you don't have a temple or you don't have a teacher, or like in many parts of the world, Buddhism is dangerous to practice or illegal. You know, like you can be hurt because you're practicing it, you know, places like Tibet and things like that. So like, what if you're in a situation like that, or you just don't know where to go, you know, how do you start this on your own? And
so it's illegal in practice in Tibet?
It's not necessarily illegal, but it can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many political aspects about it that, Thailand is another place where there's a lot of chaos right now. The whole Myanmar and Burma thing that happened, you know, a lot of Buddhists were caught in the middle of that and, you know, because of how they were practicing. And yeah, so like there's places in the world where it's really dangerous. And,
well, it's like though, any religion, any place
it
in
is.
The world, really.
And it's really kind of sad, like, especially here in America, because like that's one of the foundations that our nation is built upon, is that we have this freedom of religion.
Yeah.
You know, and so many people came here to this country hoping for that. And like now, you know, we still have that freedom of religion, but it seems like people who practice certain religions oftentimes are harassed or, you know, targeted because they practice a certain religion. Mm-hmm. Like that really bothers me. So like one thing I love to do is down at Temple Square, you know, here in Salt Lake City, we have General Conference, which happens, which is kind of like Mormon Palooza, if you guys can picture that. But like, so people flock down here and they go to the convention center and, you know, they practice. Well, every time they go there, there are these people out front with these protesting signs, mm-hmm. you know, just spewing the most ugly things that you can ever imagine, just because these people want to go practice. And because of the history of Buddhism and the persecution they've been under, that just never sits well with me. You know, I'm like, man, why can't people do this? So I usually get a group of people to go down and we'll stand with the protesters and we'll do like the free hugs thing, you know, I'll hold the free hug sign, people could come up, and then we'd like yell nice things at people, you know, like, hey, have a nice day, and you know, and you know, but the protesters hate us so bad on that. But it's so much fun. Like the last time we went, there was this cop. Oh my gosh, I was just dying about this. So they have this little blocked in area, like where the protesters can stand. But I was kind of right in the very corner, and I was getting a little kind of pushed out by the other protesters. And so the cops would kind of say, like, hey, get back in here, okay? And this other guy kept stepping out too. And so the cop was yelling at him, but he was one of the protesters yelling, you know? And so finally the cop says, hey, get back in line. He's like, well, how come you're not telling this guy? You know, talking about me. How come you're not telling this guy to get back? And he says, well, because this guy doesn't make me want to shoot him in the head. So the guy moves back, and I was just like, okay, great. I'm going to make an effort to stay in the thing there, you know. But yeah, so, yeah, just any type of thing that we can do to bring that awareness, like, okay, you know, you might not study the same religion that I do. You know, you might not practice in the same way that I do, but most religions, when you cut away, you know, all the outer stuff, the fluff to it, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like what day we practice on, you know, what do we wear and stuff
what
like that.
What do we eat, what we don't eat.
Yeah,
what
do
we wear, what we don't
yeah,
wear.
You
what?
Know,
yeah.
But when you get to the base of it, all of it is about like being a better person and showing loving kindness to our fellow man, you know, and stuff. And if we can just go back to that, I think there'd be a lot less hostility towards.
When you say go back to, when you say go back to it, you make it sound like we've been there before.
Well, yeah, that's kind of true. We really haven't, but it's. I guess it's just a dream, you know. Like it would be nice if we could get
dream,
to
yeah.
that point.
I have the same belief. It's like, why can't we just do that?
Like a little while ago.
Let's do that, actually. It's more let's do that.
Like I decided I was going to read the Quran, okay? Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, like so many Muslims are getting persecuted and there's this big, we're supposed
to
hate them.
I've never read the Quran.
Yeah, so.
My parents are Muslim. I'm not Muslim. But my dad let me just choose.
Yeah.
And I just chose to be spiritual, not religious.
Exactly.
But I never read. I mean, I know a few things, but that's about it. People ask me all the time, like, I should know. I don't know,
you know.
Ask my dad.
Well, and how many people have read it? You know, that's kind of the question. Like, a lot of people are saying, like, oh, they're bad. Muslims are bad. They're terrorists, you know, like, they do all this other stuff. Well, do you know that? You know, like, what do you know about the Muslim religion? And
well, the problem is people are bad.
Yes.
And you can find people everywhere.
Yeah.
And they will do whatever they do, whether it's drone attacks or mass shootings in Vegas or a bombing in a mosque or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there's always been, like, probably somewhere out in the world there's like an Amish hacker right now, you know. just, you know, it's just, there's always going to be those
mafia people are supposedly religious and, you know, in the movies they are anyway. What's that about?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's, you know, and we get kind of hung up on all these other things. Like, okay, so the geeks at Comic-Con, there's this weird thing that happens. Okay, so have you ever bought an action figure?
Yeah.
Okay, I love action figures. They're so cool. Don't be embarrassed. Okay, they're great. Okay, but there's two types of people who, when they get their action figures, how they play with them. Okay, there's the kind that like rip open the box and just like, you know, play and everything like that. But then there's the people who keep it in the box.
Oh, that's true.
You know, they keep it in the box.
On a shelf.
And they have all these codes like, you know, mint on card or new in box. You know,
well, I used to collect comic books.
Yeah, you know.
I have 3,000 of them.
So the analogy that I make is like, okay, so if you're that person and you buy the action figure and you just keep it in the box, you know, put it on the shelf and look at it every once in a while, maybe dust it off or something. You know, you're kind of missing the point of the action figure. You know, you're not letting it be what it's supposed to be. You know, you're not connecting with it on that type of level. And I think a lot of people do that with their religious practice too. You know, like we start to think like, okay, great, I'm this. I'm going to act in this certain way. I'm going to wear this certain thing. I'm going to be all swag. I'm going to go on Sunday and sit in church. But the rest of the week, I'm just going to do whatever I want. I'm just going to, you know, I always kind of see like those are the people who have the action figure still in the box sitting up there. Mm-hmm. But like, if you can get into your religion and dig down and be like, okay, great. Why do we think this? Why do we think that? Why do we, you know, why do we believe this? And understand like how it makes you connect with your fellow man and how it makes you respond to them and open your arms and your minds to somebody who has a different perspective, you know, like that's when you're getting in there and you're playing with the action figure and you're like, okay, great. You know, I'm seeing how this connects. You know, great, you have Muslim parents. Okay, I'm a Buddhist, you know. Here we are, you know, we're doing this podcast thing. And it's Salt Lake City, the Mormon Mecca. And, you know, it just, it's weird how it all connects and stuff. But we can do that because...
we're in America.
Yeah, we're in America.
That really is a big reason why we can do that. Have a podcast like that.
Yeah.
No one has to approve it. Just go, today I feel like doing a podcast. I mean, it's not that easy, but... decision to do it is that easy.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing. Yeah.
Facebook Live, let's do it. Let's share our opinions with everybody.
Yeah.
Even if it's just us going.
Yeah, it happens all the time. You know, it's great.
So tell us about a little bit of the Kindness Project.
Okay, so the Kindness Project is a little side thing that I have. Like when I was mentioning, when you take a vow, the first vow that you make is to end suffering for all sentient beings. And there's this, the beautiful and the frustrating thing about Buddhism is that they don't tell you how to do that at all. Mm-hmm. They just like, great, go, run with it, you know.
They go, you get it? Got it? Okay, great.
Great, now go. Because they want to see how people create things and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So what the Kindness Project is, it was something that was founded by myself, my beautiful wife, and our friend Tracy Magnum, who basically what it is, it's an opportunity for people to come together and show kindness to people. You know, our staple thing is we do things with the homeless. Like once a month, we'll go down and make about like, you know, 300 to 500 grilled cheese sandwiches, go down to like Pioneer Park when it's cold, hand them out, hats, gloves, you know, anything that they need to survive the night. Do that. Other people will come and they'll have an idea for it. You know, we'll be like, hey, wouldn't this be neat to do? You know, what if we could set up a Christmas party at an old folks center where nobody gets any visitors? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, what if we could do some type of trick-or-treating for kids who are stuck in a hospital on Halloween?
So it's kindness to people, kind of like, I don't remember the name. You know, the Big Brother.
Like the Big Brother Project, but
it's multiple.
It's random, yeah.
Humans.
Yep, like we do things at the Veterans Center, like I mentioned, like the old folks' homes, children's hospitals, the homeless.
So if they, just so we can wrap up, thank you very much for being on here.
Thank you.
How can they reach you about the Kindness Project?
So one thing about the Kindness Project, right now it's a Facebook group and it's a closed group, but the reason why we did that is just so people aren't inundated with like, you know, I'm not sending people a bunch of notifications and stuff if they don't want that. But it's open to everybody.
That never happens.
Right, I know. And we still don't want to be that guy just sending this out there. So if you hit me up on Facebook, Darren Lamb, the worst Buddhist.
The worst
I can hook you up.
You can have fun with that like for a half hour. You'd be like, he's the worst. Can we find your books?
The books are on my website, theworstbuddhist.com. You can find there. Or if you happen to be like a Kindle reader, they're on Amazon, and they're a lot cheaper on Amazon. They're on Smashwords.
You charge more?
Well,
that makes no sense at all.
The hardback, and I get to sign them and stuff like that, and you know,
cool.
Be all cool and official. But but if you just want to read, they're very inexpensive on Amazon, and so.
Great. So Amazon, they can find you by your name, Darren Lamb?
Yes, and theworstbuddhist.com.
Theworstbuddhist.com. And your classes?
I teach a free meditation and mindfulness class. They're the first Sunday of every month. And I actually have a link to the meditation class in the comment section of this podcast. So you can find all the information right there.
Cool. Thank you guys for watching and listening to the Ultra Perform Show, the show about performing your best in business and life, where we get experts from around the world to share with you what they're experts at. So tune in tomorrow for our show at 5 o'clock. See you guys later. Bye. Takes a second to say bye to everyone. Yeah, we can just be. We can be part of the show just waving. See ya. Have a good one.
Last one.
It gets confusing, huh? Here you go. See you guys. Thanks for listening.